With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's face-off. On Monday's episode, we bathed together in the glow of nostalgia from The Goonies. And today we meet our challenger, a movie that proves anything Steven Spielberg and Richard Donner can do, Shane Black and Fred Decker can do similar. Pirates and Treasure are out.
Ahoy there!
Dracula and Frankenstein are in. It's going to be a tough decision on which movie emerges as champion from this week's Clash, because today, from 1987, we're the Monster Squad.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Chris Tilly.
So this is part two. We did The Goonies on Monday. We are doing The Monster Squad today. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. As a reminder, I picked these movies. You're welcome. And the connection this week, if you have forgotten, is the films of Mary Ellen Trainor. Films in which Mary Ellen Trainor plays a mother to our protagonists. No, it's not. It's Not All Gangs of Youths Are Bad News. News. Not All Gangs of Youths Are...
I still don't like that one. Can I go back to Ellen Trainor? Because I did say on the last one, this is her third and fourth film on Clash of the Titles. Do you know the other two that she's appeared in?
Yes. As long as there are no further questions, yes, I do.
What are they, Alex?
No, that's another question. That's not fair. We haven't done any Lethal Weapons. I know her mainly from the Riggs as psychiatrist in the Lethal Weapon films, which we haven't done. So I know I'm going to kick myself.
She was the sister in, these aren't ones we've done, but she's the sister in Romancing the Stone as well. And she's the reporter, Gail Wallens, in Die Hard. And Ricochet, she plays the same character in both films. Stephen D'Souza crossover.
What has she been in that we've covered, Chris?
Scrooged and Congo.
Oh, bollocks. I was
going to say Congo. Oh, what is she in? What is she in Congo? Not what is she. Who is she in Congo? I didn't think she played a gorilla.
She's Moira in Congo, and that's all I've got.
Who's Moira?
Yeah, who the hell is Moira? You can't just say, you've just IMDb'd it, Chris. You don't remember her being in Congo. That's cheating. I call foul. That's not fair.
And do you know who her famous husband was?
Mr. Trainor.
Robert Zemeckis.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise known as Mr. Trainor.
Oh, okay, good. I think that deserves a rewatch of Congo. That's my weekend sorted. Right then, we have done The Goonies, which was Vicky. The Monster Squad is today. I gave The Monster Squad to you, Christopher. Take us on a journey.
Cool. As the Ultimate Sword hasn't got a huge amount of plot, I'm going to give you a bit of synopsis and a bit of context in my intro. So, when Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, the Gillman, and the Mummy rise up to take over the world, the adults don't take any notice. So it's left to a group of misfit kids to fight back by locating a magical amulet and opening a vortex that will banish the creatures for good. Written by Shane Black and Fred Decker, The Monster Squad hit screens in 1987 and quickly sank without a trace. But then something strange happened. The film screened around the clock on cable, introducing the movie to legions of kids. When those kids grew up, it became the focus of anniversary screenings and fan events on the festival and convention circuit. Then, when the film finally hit DVD, it sold in huge numbers, turning the Monster Squad, belatedly, into Black & Decker's biggest success since the portable drill.
It's nice.
Score! Love it.
I had to really go around the houses to get to that.
It's fair enough. What? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, it was worth it. 100%.
Was it? No, it was. It was, yeah.
Something's out there that's killing people. And if it's monsters, nobody's going to do a thing about it but us.
Soon the creatures of the night shall rule the world.
Real monsters? Us? Midnight in the world, remember? Maybe we can be like Mask Squad and Stygia. Two mask bombs.
We got a 1035. Stitch back up. Hurry up!
Amitra Squad. The book is right. Don't you think it's all true?
By midnight. They won't seem so young anymore. The Monster Squad.
Wolfman's gone.
So, first watch, people. Vicky, was this a first watch for you? I feel like it might have been.
Yeah, it was. I've never even heard of it. I'm really sorry. And imagine my surprise when I found out that Shane Black wrote it, who's my new favourite man since doing this podcast, because I've had to like listen to interviews with him and find out stuff about him rather than just relying on the lazy opinion that he might probably be a bit of an arsehole. Turns out he's not, and I think he's great. And obviously he's a brilliant writer. But I was really surprised that he wrote it, and it meant that I went into it with extremely high expectations.
Interesting.
You know, I don't think you're alone. I sort of assumed this had attained the cult status, maybe not of the Goonies, but had reached for more people than it had. But I don't think it has. I think like it's like the fact that no one got this movie, even when people were pairing the Goonies on our Twitter page at ClashPod. The Monster Squad never popped up, which means I think it's still a bit of an anomaly. I don't think as many people know about this movie as they should. I come from a place where I absolutely adored this movie as a child. I think I must have watched it about 10, 12 times as a kid, but I stopped. It's not been a rewatch for me. So again, much like the Goonies on Monday, first time in about 30 years since I've seen this movie. Boy, was I excited.
How old do you think you were when you watched it, Alex, first time?
Probably about 5 years younger than you, I imagine. Something like that. Around that.
Because I guess I was about 10 when it came out, 9. I wish I could have seen it when I was the age I saw the Goonies, which was 7. But I think I was probably closer to 15 when I saw this.
That was older than me.
It would have been a video rental. And I think that's part of the problem with this film. And once we've gone through the movie, I'll talk about why it flopped. But it was a PG-13 in America and it was a 15 in the UK. So this is a film that is for kids. And yeah, if in England, if you were under 15, you could not see it. And, you know, that was the kiss of death for it.
You could if you were in my house with my mum's loose respect for rating systems on video cassette boxes. I mean, like RoboCop when I was 14. That was a bit much, but thanks, mum. This movie hit me. I was about 10 or 11 when I saw it, and I absolutely loved Monsters as a kid. Like just to give you an idea, that I rebought recently three Usborne books that I had as a kid because I wanted to go on a nostalgia journey, which were about UFOs, monsters, and ghosts. I, as an 11-year-old, took all the bulbs out of my bedroom lamps and replaced them with red and green bulbs.
Oh my God, yeah. I did that! I can't believe you did that. I never even knew. I just had red ones and I thought it was the most. I was like, look at my spooky room. And I think I've buried that memory. I've never admitted that to anyone and I've buried that memory. That's amazing. Amazing. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no. I mean, I stuck a sign that said Monster Lab on the door and I got out a chemistry set that I'd been bought and just left it out on my desk with half-filled test tubes. And I wore a white coat when I was hanging out in my room like a scientist who had a monster lab.
But so, by yourself? Like not with a squad? just you?
I was the monster boy? the monster child? If this movie was a solo performance, if there was one person in this movie, then yes, this would be very similar to my life.
And who was your favourite monster, Alex?
As a kid, I guess my favorite would be the one that scared me most. And of all creatures as a kid, the thing that scared me most was a werewolf. I was terrified of werewolves. Dracula was always camp to me. And Frankenstein, is he a baddie? Ugh, no. And, but the Wolfman was werewolves in general. I found absolutely like the idea that one could be out there and they move so fast and it's that primal thing, claws and teeth. So werewolves, Chris, what was yours?
Wait and see. Shall we talk about the movie?
Let's talk about the movie.
A bit of background first. And I've got some really interesting information on this one off the back of a documentary called Wolfman's Got Nards, which was co-directed by Andre Gower, who plays Sean, the lead in this film. It hasn't actually come out in the UK yet, or anywhere actually, but I believe distribution's coming soon for it. But I saw it at Frightfest, at its European premiere, and there's some really interesting stuff about the making of this film. So basically, it was Fred Decker, the director and co-writer, and Shane Black, who we just mentioned, met at UCLA. They became friends. And around the time that Shane Black realized he wasn't very good at acting and might be a bit better at writing, Decker asked him to help him out on a project that he called The Little Rascal Meets the Universal Monsters. So Black went away and wrote a 150-page script, which would have cost, he estimates, $40 million to make, which was way out of their price range. So he and Decker rewrote it together and really pared it down. And they took it to Universal, logically, because they wanted to use all of the monsters from the Universal Studios back catalogue. Universal turned them down, had no interest in it. So they decided to push ahead elsewhere, using the characters, but not recreating the same look of the Jack Pierce designs that Universal had used.
Well, I'll save it for the moment, but we do need to talk about exactly what copyright means, because I'm a little confused as to exactly, you know, how stringent these guidelines about not ripping off someone else's property is. For this movie.
And if we're calling it a ripping off, it was actually Stan Winston, the special effects and makeups wizard Stan Winston, who sketched all the creatures himself, and all the designs are based off of his drawings. All right, so the film begins with a prologue. And I'm going to read you out the brief prologue. It says, 100 years before this story begins, it was a time of darkness in Transylvania, a time when Dr. Abraham Van Helsing and a small band of freedom fighters conspired to rid the world of vampires and monsters and to save mankind from the forces of eternal evil. They blew it. Which I think is funny, but then doesn't it spoil the next scene where we watch them going into battle? I feel like it takes all the tension out of that by that cheap joke.
Yeah.
It would be like if a new hope started with Luke's going to meet Darth Vader, who he yet doesn't know is his father.
So we have a fun we have a fun opening sequence, though, showing that, which is the townspeople bursting into a castle. A bride gets staked, so we know that this is kind of, it's quite violent, it's quite edgy for a kid's film. There's a virgin woman has to read something to a magical amulet. There's skeletons emerging. We see a bat transform into a vampire in a quite cool sort of transformation scene of four moves that I think is quite cleverly done. And then the vortex appears and sucks these monsters in, and that is your prologue, and then it cuts to the present day.
Yeah. Did you watch a couple of the deleted scenes? That, I mean, there are two things, I think. First of all, I think you kind of mentioned it, for Shane Black had a $40 million script. I started reading that script and, like, what he wanted would have been super cool.
I couldn't find that.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, yeah. What's in it? Because obviously that opening scene's very different.
It's got like men on horseback, zeppelins flying overhead. It's like this huge scene. And then there's a bit, a much smaller bit, but a bit that kind of, I think, really helps to explain it, that they actually shot, that you can watch on YouTube, which you might have seen, where they've staked Dracula at the start and he's got a stake through his heart. So they've caught him and staked him. But then this guy who's watching Dracula's body while Van Helsing is in the castle is attacked by his brides, and he runs out of stakes trying to fend them off. And so he pulls the stake out of Dracula's heart to defend himself, and Dracula wakes up. And this really starts to help set up, like, what happens in the modern day a little better, because it's all, I was very confused at the start about exactly where Dracula goes. He just, like, the vortex opens, but he's not even around. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there's that deleted scene. Which is on YouTube. Anyone can watch it.
Cool. We'll post it on Twitter. So then we're in the present day, and sort of the next hour, you're kind of telling two separate stories. We're establishing the Monster Squad, and we're establishing the monsters themselves. So the Monster Squad, you've got Sean, who's kind of the leader, who we meet. He's drawing pictures of monsters to post on the door of the club, and he's got a Stephen King Rules t-shirt.
And I love that t-shirt.
He's desperate to watch.
I just bought it. I was watching it, and I went, yeah, I went online immediately like a nerd and went, oh, bought that. So yeah, I'm awaiting the arrival of my Stephen King Rules t-shirt as we speak. Do you not do that ever? Because you can pretty much, any t-shirt that you see in a movie, they have made somewhere now. Do you never immediately
I honestly really thought about it, but then I thought if it wasn't a million miles away from Christmas, I just would have had it earmarked for your Christmas present. But it's all right, you've ruined that now, so
yeah, don't worry about it.
I mean, for me, it's something I would have considered when I was a teenager, but I'm in my 40s now, so... No.
Well, when I get to my 40s, I'll stop doing it.
Alex is very much 40.
No.
41. I've been counting.
I feel like I'm aging really quickly on this show, like the Nazi at the end of The Last Crusade.
And Sean as well is something I'd not spotted before. He's really, really keen to watch a horror film called Groundhog Day Part 12.
Yeah,
that
really
weird.
Me.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
And so we meet Horace, who, thanks to a glandular problem, is overweight, and he's getting bullied and beaten up by the brother from the Wonder Years.
The kid. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I had to look that up. That was driving me insane.
Very recognisable face. Always played a bully, but he was very effective. And at that point, we also meet Rudy, the cool kid who shows up on his bike, smoking a cigarette.
Come on, man. Like, how old is this kid? He's smoking back at school. You can't do that. Like, how old is he supposed to be? Honestly, like 12?
Hang on. Do you know what? It doesn't matter, as The Rock says, because, like, he's so cool. I remembered watching this. Rudy is the reason I still smoke, because I thought Rudy was the coolest character I'd seen in a movie ever. And I love the fact he smoked. And just as soon as I was old enough, I had one of those cigarettes in my mouth, just like Rudy.
Why wait? He's only about 8. Anyway, what's he doing to wait?
He's immediately here.
No, but seriously.
He's immediately heroic, though. He makes the bullies eat a dirty candy bar in the process of rescuing Horace. So we like him. And we've also got Patrick and Eugene, members of the Monster Squad. I can't remember much about them. And Phoebe, who is the little sister who desperately wants to join the group. So she's very much the Vicky of this gang.
You little fucker.
Oh. Who would you be, Chris? Because I'm Rudy, obviously. So Vicky's Phoebe. Who are you?
I see you as Eugene, actually, Alec.
No, I'm not Eugene.
Or maybe Patrick. No, Patrick's not the least memorable one. Maybe Patrick.
The two that apparently, no one knows.
Andre Gower actually screen tested for the role of Rudy, and he was upset when he didn't get it because he wanted to be Rudy because he's the cool kid, in his own words.
I would be the German dude.
That's a good one.
Scary German dude.
Scary German dude. In fact, that's what he's called in the credits, isn't it? Scary
I noticed German that. Yeah. So I've just talked about Shane Black being an excellent writer, but I watched the credits and so many people are called Thingy's sister and Scary German dude. It's like, just give them a fucking name. Like, it takes 2 seconds.
Oh, I don't mind Scary German dude. I think he's doing that on purpose, but we'll get to Patrick's sister. But the fact that she's credited as Patrick's sister is not cool.
We will get to Patrick's sister. Don't you worry.
I have to, at this stage, Vicky, I'm getting the vibe that you enjoyed this. Because I wondered if you went back and watched the trailer, because the trailer for this really tried to make it seem like it was going to be a Ghostbusters.
I know. So movie. I haven't seen the trailer, but I saw the poster. I love the poster. And it's like, you know who you call for ghosts. I was like, yeah. I do know. Yeah. I really know.
It's exactly that in the trailer. It goes, you know who to call when you've got ghosts, but who do you call when you've got monsters? Yeah.
So again, very high expectations, which is possibly a mistake.
And the Monster Club, they sit in an amazing treehouse and argue about monsters all day. Did we either of you in a gang like this or hang out in a treehouse like this?
No, but I'd love the treehouse as like an aspiration. You know, there's the pirate ship in the Goonies and the treehouse as, you know, the den space that kids can escape to. We never had a den. There was not the space. I remember for my, this makes just sound really poor, but we weren't. But for my 16th birthday, I made my mum and dad basically like give me the shed because I was so sick of being in my house because there was no room in my house. There was no space, no privacy, nothing. And I was like, look, all we do is keep a fucking dusty old lawnmower in there. I want it. And I painted it with my friend and stuck little things on the wall and posters of I can't even remember what, and just sat in there and smoked fags and did that for about 3 weeks. It was like, oh, there's too many spiders in here, I'm just gonna sack that off. And then it was basically, I mean, it's the bridging period between being able to get into a pub. The minute I could get into a pub, I didn't need a shed, but there was an awkward sort of 6 months where I couldn't pass for 18, and I didn't want to be in my house.
You've got a shed now, though, and obviously the pubs are closed. Are you down at the bottom of your garden quite a lot with a bottle of gin?
Yeah. I was going to tell you this. We're getting the kids to paint it. We're going to turn it into a tiki bar. The minute you're allowed round, come round. That is honestly happening.
Any joke that involves child labour, I am happy with.
It's going to be brilliant.
So this treehouse where they hang out, there are no girls allowed, but it's got a view into a teenage girl's bedroom. And I think that this happened in almost every teenage movie in the 80s in America. Did every house and treehouse look into a girl's bedroom window?
I think they did, yeah.
And so while the Monster Squad is assembling, the monsters are also arriving in town. So there's a World War II plane for some reason, containing crates of dead bodies, including a crate that says Frankenstein Bavaria on it, flying into town, and a bat gets loose in that plane and it turns out to be Dracula, who...
Will you explain? This is the bit I was trying to allude to at the start. Why are they on this plane? Like, when I was saying, I don't really understand how what happened in Transylvania back then then ends up with Dracula and Frankenstein on this plane. Why? Is it just because why not?
Well, it's 100 years later, isn't it? So every 100 years, this thing happens. And so they're all... getting to the place. Dracula's basically getting the gang back together.
So he's put them on the plane.
Yes.
He's put Frankenstein on the plane. Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
he's the one. He's the boss man, and he is trying to assemble all the monsters.
I felt that someone, another party had put them on the plane and they were just being shipped somewhere, like to a museum or something. But I think a lot of this film, this watch as an adult, I was like, well, that doesn't hold water. I need more explanation there. But as a kid, I didn't care. Mm. I filled in the blanks myself.
Yeah. And we've talked about this, that sometimes this podcast encourages us to overanalyze films that previously you just watched and go, yeah, I don't care. That's fine. On to the next scene.
Yeah. Agreed.
So Dracula turns into a bat, flies out after his cargo. And next thing we know, he's in town with a very cool car. I don't know where he got that, with a silver skull on the front. Completely badass. I'm not asking any questions. We meet a wolf man in town who's desperate to be locked up.
He's so good. He's so good.
Isn't he?
It's really, really. It's like a moving scene when he bursts into the police station and he's like, just shoot me. It's like, wow. Like, it could have been done even for laughs and it would have been good. But the way he does it, he's like, I've got one shot and I'm going to make my name as this wolfman and I'm just going to give it everything. I thought he was brilliant.
And actually, that the wolfman does get a couple of very effective transformation scenes in this. One in a phone box, one in the back of an ambulance. You know, I guess a few years previous, with a bit more money, John Landis had done the one take transformation really effectively. And here they don't have that kind of budget. But I think the way they do it with the clever cutaways, or just
they put a blanket over him in an ambulance.
Yeah, but
it's very clever.
It's the way
stick a blanket on him.
No, but the way he bursts out of his shoe, I think that's giving you the information you need.
I'm joking. It's well done on a budget, but he is under a blanket on a stretch.
Dracula summons the mummy and the wolfman together, and the gill man out of the water, who brings Frankenstein's coffin with him. He attaches electrodes to Frankenstein's temples and summons lightning, which brings Frankenstein back to life and says, welcome, wake up, old friend. It is our time. So, Alex, you wanted to talk about copyright infringement. Is now a good point to do that?
Yeah, why not? Thanks, Chris. Yeah. So obviously it's a Sony movie, not a Universal movie. So as we said, they weren't allowed the Universal monster designs. They weren't allowed the creature from the Black Lagoon. So we have Gill Man, entirely different. But mainly, it was reading an interview with a member of Stan Winston's team who just talks about how they made it different. And he says, so, for example, just look at our Frankenstein's monster. The Universal Frankenstein monster is the Boris Karloff creature. But you see, what we've done, it looks a bit like that. But instead of putting bolts in the neck, ours has bolts in its forehead. You're like, you're just waiting for the rep from Universal to come. Hi, I'm the rep from Universal. Just checking you haven't infringed on our copyright. Just going to take a look at your Frankenstein. What the hell? That's exactly the same.
You know what you're making me think of, Alex? You're making me think of Coming to America, where the fast food restaurant, it's not McDonald's, it's McDowell's. And they don't have golden arches. They don't have golden arches. They have golden arcs.
But I couldn't believe it when I read it. I was like, I wonder what they've done to get away with this. It's where the bolts are on Frank. They're on his forehead, though. Yours are on his neck. Ours, totally different, on his fucking forehead, mate.
Before it was a Sony film, it was TriStar Pictures distributed it. It was someone called Taft Entertainment made it. I think it was basically a matter of, and people sort of allude to this talking about the film on the documentary, that Universal just didn't care. They weren't interested in this IP. They weren't interested in making the movie, and they weren't interested in going after anyone else who potentially infringed on their designs. It was just something that they were not interested in.
Well, we don't really care at the moment, but you just wait. We're saving it for our dark universe and the mummy. then we'll care.
Well, we could very... I think we should do Invisible Man sometime, the new one. That's really good.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
He just says, how many holes does a straw have? 0, 1, or 2? The internet can't figure it out, so I've done what any sane person would do. Ask the Luke and the Pete.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and Luke Moore for an unplanned half hour every Monday and Thursday as we talk about, well, anything really, from your emails to life's great mysteries to this guy.
The noise you're going to hear sounds like a man being interrupted by a car. He isn't being interrupted by the car. He is making the car sound.
Sina, that's a hippie.
Por qué?
How on earth is he doing that? Beep, 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 beep. How does he make that noise? Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Beep, 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 beep.
The Luke and Pete Show is a Stakhanov production.
Back to Monster Squad. So the Monster Squad meet up with Scary German Guy. There is a funny moment where they say, what's German for please don't murder us? Which is a funny moment. He overhears them until when you think back to that scene, a bit later on, we find out that he's got numbers on tattooed on his arm and he was in the Holocaust. And so that actual line takes on a completely different meaning when you see it in that context. So, and
yeah, I totally missed that the first time round. He was a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comes out of it's for me. It was a good moment, but it did kind of come out of nowhere when they're like, "Oh, thanks, Mister. You sure do know a lot about monsters." And he's like, "Yes, I do. See my Nazi camp tattoo." It's like, fucking hell, man. But like, it just I wasn't ready for it. That's all. It just took me back a bit.
I think it's one of those things as well, as if you know you're a grown up and you understand, and if you're a kid, it's just going to go over your head. Which I don't have a problem with. But that scene, scary German guy gives them pie. We realise he's not a scary guy. He's really a good guy.
Because what's more American than pie? Exactly. He's a good immigrant.
And he sort of starts explaining the MacGuffin of the movie, which is this talisman that wards off evil.
I like this scene. My only little sticky thing with it is it's cool. It's like, oh, there's a vortex and an amulet. But then scary German guy says, however, there is another option. And I think when you're explaining your thing, if saying there is another option is an option, it possibly is a little bit too complicated. You might want to pare it back a bit. Like, there is another option is never a mysterious or inciting thing to say anyway.
But the German guy isn't the first guy. They go because they're looking for someone to translate Van Helsing's diary, which is in German, and they have a discussion about it, which is one of the great non sequitur jokes of the movie, where Patrick goes, my sister takes German at high school. And another kid goes, she doesn't take German. She just stands around and lets the guys touch her tits.
Wow. Yeah. Great.
Look, I get that it's not okay now, but like as a non sequitur, she doesn't take German. She just stands around and lets the guys touch her tits. It's funny. I'm so sorry, Vicky. I laughed and then I went, I'm going to say it on the show. And then I went, don't say it on the show. Vicky will be there. And then the bad part of me won. So...
Are you implying that Vicky wouldn't like it, or that Vicky would see too much of herself in that character?
I speak fluent French. Do you not know?
By which I mean, I stand around in the shed.
Moving.
Letting the neighbours.
All right, moving anyway. Swiftly on. Moving swiftly on.
What did you say it was a tiki bar?
I didn't. I said titty bar. You know I did.
And now we get some really great scenes where the monsters and the monster squad start crossing over a little bit. So Eugene is convinced there's a monster in his closet, but his dad isn't having any of it. And that's a very funny reveal when we see the monster just standing there in his closet while his dad is making a joke of it.
He's so good. Eugene is probably one of the funniest characters in it.
And Frankenstein and Phoebe meet up. So Phoebe is the little girl who's desperate to be a member of the gang. It was a scene taken straight out of the Universal movie where they meet by a little riverbank. And they make friends. And she wants the squad. She sees like Frankenstein is her way into the gang. And she wants them to meet Frankenstein. They're all terrified. And I love it when she shouts out, don't be chicken shit.
Yeah.
She is a very funny kid. And so when it becomes clear they're going to have to go to war with the monsters, we get a montage, and everyone loves the montage, but I don't think everyone is pulling their weight in this montage.
The montage threw me, because I was like, is that a kid making a bullet? But all right, fine, maybe schooling is different in America.
I'll tell you what they're doing. Phoebe is dressing Frankenstein up. Sean is looking at a map. Patrick is making membership cards. Eugene is doing a letter writing project. And Rudy is making wooden stakes and silver bullets and sourcing a bow and arrow. So,
because Rudy's a badass.
He is a badass.
Told you.
Although the letter that Eugene's writing is kind of a joke. It just says, dear army guys, come quick, there are monsters.
It's cute. Yeah, I like that. And it pays off.
But it works.
It pays off.
I thought the army guy at the end, the army guy at the end has got that letter rolled up in his pocket, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think they miss a trick there by not having that army guy demanding to speak to Eugene and then being put in front of a little kid.
Yes, that's a good idea.
And so they're getting ready for action, and we see what the monster are up to as well. Dracula's doing his thing. He's got the Wolfman tied up, ready to go into action. He's got three girls in a cupboard that he's going to turn into his brides. And then we've got some really clever, funny Shane Black conceit. So kicking off with the famous kicking in the film, Horace kicking the Wolfman in the bollocks and shouting out, Wolfman's got nards. Was this a big deal to you, Alex? This line was a big deal to me when me and my brother were kids.
Yeah, Isn't that weird? I don't know why. I don't know whether it was, but yeah, this was a huge thing. I think it was honestly like you run that scenario in your head. You're like, if you were attacked by a werewolf, or at least I did, you were attacked by a werewolf, what would you do? And seeing that you could kick it in the nards and discovering the word nards for the first time, it was a huge moment.
So was nards a word that was in use in America at the time? Or did this get made up for what the Monster Squad by Shane Black?
Good question.
Because the closest I've got, we use the word gonads. So you might say nads over here, but certainly we never said nards. But yeah, I mean, I just remember playing this scene over and over again because it made my brother very nearly piss himself each time.
Great scene.
And obviously it's universal because the documentary's, you know, named after that line. It's obviously everyone, for some reason, it just connected with people. We've got the very clever use of the garlic on Horace's pizza burning Dracula's face, which
that's a nice touch. That is a nice touch. It's things like that, because little moments like that, anyone who was into monsters as a kid does have these conversations, like if you were attacked by a vampire, what would you do? Like, and it's like, you know, can garlic pizza, if garlic's on a pizza, can it defend against a vampire? These are genuine questions that troubled children at that age, and seeing them done for real, like, oh, actually, yeah, garlic pizza works. That's good to know. Good to know. Like, this is a fucking documentary.
And they've got a great sequence where they're driving away on the back of a Jeep and the mummy attacks them, and they tie his bandage to a tree, and we see the mummy kind of disappearing in front of our eyes.
So good. That's another great moment.
Although much as we love Shane Black here, I think he could have had another pass at the line, see you later, Band-Aid breath.
Yeah, that's bad.
Awful, huh? Really bad.
And before we get to the finale, there is some really horrendous Burger King product placement as well, which is so cringeworthy. You know, if we can't fight them in the church, let's fight them in the Burger King. Cut to Burger King.
Are you going to skip over the part where Patrick blackmails his own sister with stolen nude photos? Or
oh, good. Are we doing the revenge porn scene?
I mean, no. Does no one want to? You know, it didn't sit very well with me.
It just felt like we've all done it. Therefore, it didn't really. Yeah, no. Go on, Vicky. Take it away. Take it away.
No, I just wanted to highlight it. That's all. There's nothing. I just couldn't believe that was in there, and that was a thing. That Frankenstein's monster has accidentally taken pictures of it, and his own. Her own brother's like, look, bitch, like, I own you now, so what are you going to do? That's really weird, no?
I think if it had come from her brother, it would have softened it slightly.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that it's Rudy who's the one doing it, who's actually saying, I am going to put this up on the school notice board unless you do what we tell you, which makes it slightly creepier, because he's just another dude with a photo. I mean, if it didn't give us one of the movies, or indeed cinema's greatest spit takes when he first sees the photo, then it would be a problem. But as it stands, that moment where he's sipping on the Pepsi and he's like, I was like, as a kid, I was like, that's hilarious. And he's seen boobs. Oh my God.
Good for him.
Yeah. So Patrick's sister, she gets bullied. She gets blackmailed. She gets criticism for being a virgin, and then for not being a virgin, and she doesn't even...
That's right.
She doesn't even
Welcome
get a name.
Welcome to the eternal struggle. We can never get it right. You're frigid. You're slag. It's awful. It's hard out there. You don't know. That's what it's like.
Vicky. Bloody hell. I didn't think this would be the film that finally got Vicky. Touch a nerve. Are you done?
I've finished.
Do you want to disembark from that high horse?
If you're not done, we've got, Chris and I have got photos of you that we will put on the Twitter feed. So make sure you are done. Yeah.
And then we have the finale, which I just think is hit after hit. I was going to pick out my favourite bits of it, but I just think it's a really well put together climax. So it starts off with Rudy fighting the brides, and he sort of effortlessly stakes them, and then the bat attacks, and we see Dracula mid transformation.
That is brilliant, because that was really unexpected to see like half bat, half Dracula. You don't really see that. And it looks, it's a strange moment because Dracula's supposed to be, pun alert, unflappable. Brilliant. But to see like half bat is like, oh, it looks weird and it looks quite weak, but that's good, as in like a weak creature. The only thing about Rudy is, you know that scene in Anchorman where Steve Carell's character, after the fight, he's like, I killed a guy. And I was like, God, you did. Do you not think it's weird that Rudy all of a sudden is like, I'm smoking fags at school and then I'm just going to murder four people? No?
Nope, not at all. because he's smoking a fag as he does it. That's why, honestly, it's a real hero moment in this movie. The bit where he's pulling stakes from his back and then he's loading them into the bow and firing them at Dracula's brides with a cigarette hanging out the corner of his mouth. God, I went outside and had a cigarette when I saw that bit.
In the documentary, you see him now, Alex. He saw some of the screenings when they did the Q&A. He comes in on a bike, which I think is really cool.
See, honestly, I cannot explain. He was like my idol when I watched this. Like when I was watching this movie, Rudy was who I wanted to be.
We see the Wolfman blown to bits and then comes back to life. And there's some really great footage behind the scenes of how they did this. They literally put little remote control cars into the underneath the limbs, and they're driving his arms and legs around. Rudy shoots the Wolfman with the silver bullet, and in sort of a brief moving moment, the man thanks him before dying. I think,
and that's nice because it crosses Rudy's face as well. You sort of see him, like there's a brief flicker of like, you know, the consequences. He's not, if he, like, that's why I think it's quite good, because he doesn't just kill him and like the guy says thank you and he's like, yeah, no worries, man, or don't worry, dude, or whatever, or just like turns around and does something else. You do see him register, like, you know, what he's actually done. So I think that's quite good that's in there.
He has to kill a man in order for him to realise that it's bad, because he didn't have any problem killing three women about 30 seconds earlier, no?
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. That's what you're saying. Sorry, just to be clear. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah. We get a good proper look at the Gill Man here, I think looks amazing. And the Gill Man crushes a cop's head, and then we've got the moment where Horace shoots him, turns around to the bully, says, who keep calling him Fat Kid, says, my name's Horace, and cocks his gun. Which the one screening?
That's a brilliant moment. But you've called him Horace all the way through this. But his friends don't call him Horace. His friends call him Fat Kid. Yeah. They never call him Horace.
It does feel like they watched the Goonies and doubled down on it. They went, Chunk doesn't seem offensive enough.
Yeah. I love that Horace moment when he's like, the name's Horace. Good for him. It's really good. But his friends should call him Horace because it's his name and they're his friends.
It gets a big cheer in the cinema. I saw this at the Prince Charles anniversary screening, and it does get a big cheer that moment. But you're right. I mean, maybe young Shane Black thought that they needed to really hammer home that moment to keep calling him that. But you're right. His mates shouldn't be calling him that. You know, there's a lot. Oh. We said it before. There's a lot of things that wouldn't happen now in a movie in this film.
Really, is it that it turns out like the best defense against monsters is just guns? Because that seems to be the message at the end. It really wants to have its cake and eat. It's like, turns out everything can be shot and blown up. I mean, it'll come back to life, but we still get to shoot it and blow it up first. Like Gillman, poor Gillman, it lifts like a coffin out of a swamp and then gets shot with a shotgun. That is its arc, like through this movie. It does fuck all else. It's like, you know, and it's supposed to be quite terrifying. Horace just goes bang, shotgun, done it. My name's Horace. See ya.
we've got Dracula being a complete badass, walking towards Phoebe while killing cops that are running at him without even looking
at them.
That's
really good. Yeah, really scary. Like fun. And just like pow, pow. Weird moment though when he says, "Give me the amulet, you bitch."
So brilliant moment.
She's 5 years old. You can take it off her. Like, you just can. You don't need to. He lifts her up. Give it me, you bitch. It's like, just grab it out of her hand. She's a child.
No, it's like if a vampire has to be invited into your home, so a vampire has to be given an object you're holding. You must know the rules of vampires.
That's the one that passed me by.
So there's quite a lot of footage of them shooting that scene, and it is quite disturbing watching the sweet little girl getting picked up. And she talks about it now that she said she wasn't scared of monsters, but she was petrified of Duncan, who played Dracula. because he had fangs and red eyes. And so when she was getting ready for the scene, Fred Dekker told her, "You need to scream." And she said, when do you want me to scream?" And he said, you'll know the moment.
Oh,
and he kept his eyes and mouth closed the whole time, so she couldn't see the eyes and the teeth. And then when they yelled action, he opened both and hissed at her. And apparently they had to shoot it twice because the first time she tried to scream, but no air came out. She was so frightened.
Oh, my God.
And talking about it now.
Oh, my God.
Talking about it now, Shane Black says, I think she turned out okay. I don't think or see any permanent damage, but scaring the hell out of kids seemed like a great idea at the time. So, and she's a very nice girl. She's been on tour with Andre and the guy that plays Rudy. They go to all these screenings and she loves the film, but she was terrified as a child.
I'm right in thinking Dracula was going to be Liam Neeson at one point. They auditioned Liam Neeson for the role and he didn't get it. They picked Duncan. Yeah, he wasn't known at the time, but I can't pronounce his second name. Duncan Rieger. Anyway, he got the part. But then Fred Dekker was going to put Liam Neeson in the movie in another scene that they didn't end up shooting, where at the mansion where they're looking for the amulet, there was a scene, I don't think they shot it, but it was definitely scripted, where they're met by this old man who's like, "We're on the same mission. I'm looking for the amulet too," and starts showing them deeper into the mansion. And then you find out that actually it was Dracula in disguise, like Scooby-Doo. Cool. And he rips off the Liam Neeson mask and it's Dracula underneath. He wasn't disguised as Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson was playing the guy Dracula was disguised as. Yeah, that would have been too meta.
I think the guy that plays Dracula is fantastic in this, though. I think he's really
effective. He's good. He's good.
Frankenstein grabs Dracula at this point, calls him bogus, and throws him onto a railing, effectively staking him. And then we've got these very sweet scenes with Phoebe holding Frankenstein's hand while she's saying the German. And we've got the vortex appears, and Sean is kind of supposed to be our hero. And so we get him, he gets involved in the action, and sort of wind is blowing him up in the air while he's trying to grab Dracula, and Van Helsing comes out of the vortex to give him the thumbs up.
And at least one police officer gets sucked in. I don't want to do that Austin Powers, but think about the henchman kind of moment. But genuinely, like, I don't know what's in that vortex. I can't imagine it's good. A police officer gets sucked into it.
The stakes are high. People are really dying. And then we've got, so Dracula's done away with into the vortex, and then you've got the moment when Frankenstein is being blown away and Phoebe says, don't go away. And it's really cute. Again, those behind the scenes sequences, watching her shoot that scene. She's so sad when she's throwing that cuddly toy. It's really, really sad.
No, it's beautiful. It's honestly, I'll shed a tear. Shed a bloody tear.
And with that, it's over. Really quick ending. Suddenly, as soon as that vortex closes, they're kind of high-fiving each other, and then we're into a horrible rap song.
Ooh, brilliant rap song.
Awful.
It's just amazing. Amazing. It works because that last bit, granted the whole song isn't great, but the bit where Sean gives the army dude the card and just says, "We're the Monster Squad." Oh, love that. Love that ending. And then the beat comes in. And then, yeah, it goes downhill. But that little moment there, the big sort of finish in the town square was the camera pulls out and, you know, that like Die Hard 2 ending, like where you sort of see the whole scene. It's great.
So this film was a flop. There's no two ways about it. They're sort of trying to delve into it a little bit on Wolfman's Got Nards. And I mentioned that you talked about the trailer earlier. As good as that trailer was, the posters were a disaster. They were wanted posters for the monsters that were all around LA with mugshots of the monsters on them. And you know that I love a pun, but the wording of these posters, the Dracula one says he's wanted for assault and battery. And the mummy one says he's wanted for statutory rap.
No.
Yes.
No.
This is how they sold this kid's movie. And all the actors, the child stars, they thought their lives were going to change with this movie. They rented limos with Shane Black and Fred Decker, went round LA to visit the cinemas, and Decker says every cinema was empty, and it was absolutely crushing. Part of the problem, as well as the marketing, was the Lost Boys came out 2 weeks before, and I think stole a lot of their thunder.
Shit.
But the top 10 that week that it came out, was Stakeout, The Living Daylights, Can't Buy Me Love, No Way Out, La Bamba, Master of the Universe, Disorderlies, the Fat Boys movie, and RoboCop, The Lost Boys and Summer School. The film didn't even crack the top 10. So it couldn't have gone worse, that release. But
I have a weird theory that it works for me, like that this movie didn't do well. I mean, obviously not for the people in it, or indeed the studio, or anyone who had any vested interest in the movie being a success. But for me, like the idea of like these outcast kids who love monsters, who are the geeks, as someone who sort of related to that aspect of them, to then have this movie that didn't attain success, that became an outcast in itself, like it felt like yours. Like even now, it feels like a movie that people have such a strong relationship with because it never attained greatness, and it is that perpetual underdog. And I think that works for me with the Monster Squad.
Yeah, I mean, it's that John Carpenter thing where he doesn't really enjoy people talking about The Thing and how much people love The Thing, because for him it pretty much destroyed his studio career. And in the documentary, it's a similar thing. You know, Shane Black has been fine. He after he wrote The Monster Squad, he wrote Lethal Weapon, which was fast-tracked and actually came out, I think, before The Monster Squad, and that completely transformed his career. But Fred Decker is much more circumspect when they ask him about his feelings towards this movie. He says, "It's my best film. It reached the widest audience, but it killed my career for a large period of time. It'll probably be on my gravestone, but I'm ambivalent about that." And he said, "It's like shooting a basketball in 1987 that doesn't go in for 20 years. And yeah, he's glad it makes people happy, but it didn't do him any favors. So it's, you're right, Alex. It's a tough thing. I guess it's, but that's the thing. We're kids. We don't know what hits and flops are. For us, this was in the same as the Goonies. But actually, in reality, in the world of show business, one of these worked and one of these didn't.
Yeah. It's a shame. Well, it's not a shame for the reasons I outlined, but yeah, I can see that if you were the director of this, Mr. Fred Decker, then it would be rather upsetting that a movie that you're proud of, and that is a great movie, you know, didn't do well because of other people's statutory rap gags.
I mean, you could have done anything. He's got a long rap sheet done. There you go. Let's sidestep any sort of rape joke.
I can't imagine how they even wrote that. Because
I know. You'd have to say it out loud. Ugh.
Yeah, because it's got a W in it. So it doesn't look the same.
Yeah. Anyway. Right, that's all I've got. Any more on this one?
No. I'm done, Chris. I'm done, Vicky.
Me too.
Let us move to the bits. Now, I have some bonus bits this week.
Okay.
I messaged Andre Gower, who plays Sean, and asked him if he would send his over, and he has done.
Oh, what? He's done his three picks.
He's done his bits. And you know what? Tammy, who plays the Childlike Empress, she got back to me about doing it. And
no.
From the Neverending Story?
Yeah, from the Neverending Story. She said, "Am I too late?" And I said, "Yes, but if you've got time to just send us a couple of sentences, we can tweet them out and read them out on another episode." So look out for that, hopefully coming soon.
Okay, great.
So do you want Andre's all-in-one, or do you want him as we move through our own?
No, let's do it as we're moving through. We should do it as normal, just with
the family.
Added Gower.
All right, so should we do his first?
Yeah, all right, Chris. I mean, you're in charge.
Okay, favourite scene. Andre Gower, what is your favourite scene in The Monster Squad? Andre's favourite scene, he's got two actually, so he's already cheated. He said Sean and Del up on the roof. So that's the scene where Sean is with his father watching the, I guess it's Groundhog Day Part 12 at the drive-in, which is a very sweet scene, a moment in the movie that we didn't touch upon. There are a few of those quite sweet moments, I think. We've just sort of gone for the action in our description of the movie, but And he also says the final action sequence, I think he really enjoyed shooting that with the wind machine. And when you see behind the scenes, it does kind of look like he's flying. So a bit of behind the scenes there. Vicky, what is your favourite scene?
I like the scene where they put the mummy's bandage thing on the tree and the mummy unwraps itself. That is good. The mummy's face is brilliant. It like, looks really scary. And the unwrapping is fun.
Alex.
Can I just... Hello, Andre. Alex here. One of the three hosts of Clash of the Titles. Lovely to be talking to you. I'm a big fan of the movie that we've been speaking about this week, and it's just great to have you through Chris telling us your favourite bits.
It's good to meet you, Alex. It's good to meet you.
Oh wow! One of your favourite bits is the rooftop scene, is it, Andre?
Yeah, I like it when they're watching, when my character's watching Groundhog Day. But this is too weird, Alex. Just do yours. Do your favourite scene.
The reason that I wanted to talk directly to Andre for a moment through you, Chris, is because my favourite scene is also the rooftop scene. So, yes, we've been talking about the action a lot, but I actually had that because it is genuinely one of the biggest sort of wish fulfillment moments. The idea that you could crawl out of a Velux window onto your family home roof and be in viewing distance of a drive-in cinema is truly one of the greatest things ever put on a cinema screen. And I was like, I want that in my life so much. So that is one of my two scenes. Didn't just add it in to chat to Andre,
Alex,
there.
I love
back
that.
With you guys now.
I love that. Yep. You and me and Rudy can be friends and we can hang out now.
Really? How is Rudy these days? Is he still smoking?
Yeah, come join the club.
Because I am. I am. So I won't lie, Andre. If Rudy's given up, it's going to piss me off a little bit because my chest hurts every day. And it's all because of him. So I hope he's in a similar amount of pain. The other scene that I liked is... it's almost one shot, actually, so I don't know if you'd call it a scene, is the bit where the squad and Frankenstein are silhouetted against a sunset and they're all walking away from camera, holding hands. It's like, that should have been your freaking poster. It's an amazing shot, and it looks like it's just really heartfelt and beautiful, and I loved it. So that scene, shot.
I've got to go with Wolfman's Got Nards due to how much it made me and my brother laugh when we were kids. Simple as that. What do you think Sean's favourite character is in the Monster Squad?
Andre's or Sean's?
Andre's, sorry.
Oh.
Get confused now.
Andre's favourite character is going to be Sean because it's him.
What do you think, Vicky?
We'll pick his dad character because they had such a nice time together. Maybe.
He has picked the same as me. We've both gone for Phoebe.
Oh, that's cute.
He hasn't put any more explanations, so I love Phoebe. I wish she'd got her own spin-off movie. In the same way that my favourite character in Stranger Things is Erica, I think that character was obviously influenced by Phoebe. And I just think she's brilliant. And I think it's good to include her here because of what they put her through at the end. She deserves the accolade.
I'm struggling to remember Stranger Things. Is Phoebe the Demogorgon thing?
Yeah, that's
is that
right.
Called
exactly.
Phoebe?
Yeah. That's right. Correct. Right. Vicky, who's your favourite character?
In keeping with it being MVW, I would say right. Stan Winston,
yeah.
Because I think the creatures are so good. They really, really are good. But also, every single grown-up actor is really giving it some, and I think that is very commendable because it would be too much if they found it all a bit ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? Like, they have to be as scary as the kids think they are, so they have to be genuinely scary and not too camp and not too flimsy. Also, just wanted to mention... Sean's dad, because when Sean says to him, oh, aren't you and mum going out tonight? And he just says, yeah, we're going to go and see a marriage counsellor. I think you've got to respect that sort of strange, there's no boundaries between you and your son. Where I'm not sure it's that helpful to say to him, me and your mum, we're in real fucking trouble here, son. So we're not off for a fancy restaurant. We're going to see a counsellor to make sure that we don't split up. So yes, also the dad, just because he doesn't seem, the scene on the roof is really lovely, but other than that, he doesn't seem much like a dad at all. in that respect.
Yeah, you imagine some of the stuff with their marriage potentially breaking up with some of the stuff that got left out of Shane Black's original script, because it's kind of weird. It's a bit of an anomaly here, isn't it? It keeps popping up without really going anywhere.
Yeah, oh my God, because then the bit where they're meant to be going to the marriage counsellor, he goes to the door, she goes, where are you going? And it's like he was just going to leave without saying. So he's walking out of their appointment to see a marriage counsellor without even saying, oh, sweetheart, I can't make it. If she'd not caught him walking out, he just would have mysteriously disappeared. I don't think he's fully in it.
Yeah, it's a bit underdeveloped.
Alex, you're right about the adults giving it their all, though. Stan Shaw, who plays Sean's dad's cop partner, he's really good in it until he meets his fiery death in a car from a petrol bomb. Oh no, dynamite! Yeah, because Dracula uses dynamite as well as all his other skills. He you don't see that often in a movie, chucking a stick of dynamite. It's not one of Dracula's famous traits. Normally he's a bloodsucker in this. Dynamite, love it. Tom Noonan, though. I can't believe we didn't mention Tom Noonan, obviously, because we talked about him so much and how good he is as Francis Dolarhyde in Manhunter when we did that episode. He's so good as Frankenstein.
I
think a lot of that is his performance. But my favourite character, I don't know if I've mentioned him, Rudy? the guy who smokes, that's his trait.
The guy who smokes. The child who smokes.
Excellent. And I will say Andre's last this time. So, Vicky, what would you change if you could change anything?
So, the line that Alex mentions at the end, when just before it finishes, and they're like, we're the monster squad. And it's a real power moment. Like, here we are, we're the squad, kind of like maybe setting up the sequel. I think what should have happened earlier is you show the gang trying and failing to be a monster squad rather than just sort of forming on the spot. Obviously, they're a group of friends, but Sean says, are we the monster squad or what? Like, let's step up and take on this challenge. But I think it would have been more of a payoff if you'd shown them causing trouble in the town, trying to solve crimes by thinking it's a monster, stuff that wasn't really happening. So they were a nuisance to the town. So the town doesn't believe that these kids can be a monster squad. So then when they save the town at the end, you've got that real rush of the town believes them. They've saved the day. They're the best guys for the job. There you go for a sequel.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of with Vicky in the sense that I don't know what the low point is before the climax in this film. I'm really unsure. You know, every like there needs to be a bit where you're like, oh my God, the team's fallen apart. Like they've broken up. They're not working together. They've fallen out. Like anything that just makes you. But in this, it seems to go from like the nothing really, like they don't falter once on their mission to defeat the monsters. And I just think it would have been nice to see them fail. but you know what I mean? If one of them had gone missing or there'd been something bad happened to the team or they'd broken up, that would have helped before the big climax. And it doesn't have that. So that would be mine. Or more Rudy maybe as well. More, or if Rudy had smoked more in it, like there'd been a funny moment where he had three cigarettes in his mouth. If he had three cigarettes in his mouths.
For me, we've touched upon the casual homophobia and the fat shaming and the slut shaming, so that's all got to go. But I'm kind of with you guys loosely in what you're saying. I'm always complaining about films being too long on here, I feel like, but I feel like this one could have used a bit more. It was too short. It was too straightforward. So as Alex says, let's put in some twists and turns. Let's have an all is lost moment. Let's develop some of those relationships. Because I think it clocks in at about 80 minutes. And it could have easily gone for another 20, which would have been nearer the length of The Goonies, actually. And yeah, I just think, you know, maybe if they could have kept in some of what was in that original script, which is Andre's thing he would change. So he...
Oh, hello, Andre.
He says, excuse me. I'd like to travel back in time and shoot all the pages from the original drafts and from our shooting script. There was so much depth and character development, backstory and examples of the kids' knowledge and some crazy shit from Shane's mind, like invading Zeppelins.
So,
what you referenced at the start. So, yeah, that opening sequence for budgetary reasons got dropped. And then evidently there was a lot more of what I just talked about. I guess that was in the back of my head when I was doing mine. So... yeah, we wanted more Monster Squad.
Well, I mean, was it in the back of your head, Chris, or did you read Andre's first before you came up with yours? Because it's weird how you sort of segued quite nicely from. And strangely, Andre thinks exactly the same as what I think. So it's just weird.
I did write mine thing. Before he sent me his. That is a fact.
Did you?
Yeah, that's a fact.
I don't know. Well, I'm going to need video evidence, and that would involve me seeing a video of you, and I'd love that, actually.
Should we get on to the verdict, Alex?
Yeah!
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
All right, then, what's the verdict this week? Chris, what are you going for? Actually, do you know what? I'll just do mine, because I think, once again, I've made it quite obvious. Or would someone else like to go first? Do we have a preference this week?
I'll go first, if
excellent.
You like.
Yay! All right, good.
Yeah. Just because of everything that Chris and Andre just said, the script for the Monster Squad, it just feels a bit underdeveloped. So The Goonies, to me, is just a more complete film. I don't think, you know, I didn't love either of them as much as I thought I was going to. It's not the Monster Squad's fault that I didn't. My expectations were too high because of Ghostbusters, and that's not their fault, how much I love Ghostbusters. But with The Goonies, like, I never loved it that much, but I just did. It just edges it. I just loved it a little bit more than Monster Squad this time. So my choice is The Goonies.
Unexpected. I didn't see that coming, actually. I thought after your lukewarm review of The Goonies, you'd be going for the Monster Squad. But interesting. Chris, do you want to go or should I go?
You can go, Alex. You seem very keen to go, so just go.
No, you go. No. I don't want to go now.
No,
don't do this.
I really don't.
Don't do this. No, don't do this. It's embarrassing. Just stop it. Stop it. Listen to me. Stop it.
All right, I'll go. So I came in with a favourite. I leave with a favourite. It's the movie that spoke to me the most as a kid. It's the movie I've seen in double figures and watched religiously as a child. In this corner, in Shay, me, right now, in this room, I'm the Monster Squad.
Interesting. Well, I didn't come into this one with a favourite because I love both of these films and I really didn't know which way I was going to lean. The Goonies has a special place in my heart because it's the one that really spoke to me when I was a kid. But I've had to do some self-reflection this week and I think I've been lying to myself.
What?
I think
Why?
I think I like the music in The Goonies and the town and the idea of being in a gang and having an adventure. But I don't think I actually like the film all that much, especially watching it with the eyes of, through the eyes of an adult, where I found it a bit exhausting. I thought it felt like it needed to get to the pirate stuff quicker, and I wasn't a fan of some of the sentimentality, and I didn't like the ending all that much. And the Monster Squad feels a bit more authentic watching it through adult eyes.
I'm so excited. Is this going the way I think it's going? This is exciting.
I feel like the kids act and say a bit more like real kids would rather than maybe what executives think it would be funny for kids to do and say. And it doesn't have the budget and scale of The Goonies, but I think it's got more memorable moments and a better ending. Now, when I was at Comic-Con, I actually interviewed Sean and Rudy, Andre Gower and Ryan Lambert, and I asked them what was better, Goonies or Monster Squad? Who was the better gang? And they said to me, they fought Mama from the train and we fought Dracula. Their neighborhood was turning into a golf course and we killed monsters and saved the frickin' world. And so on that evidence, and because I'm a monster guy rather than a pirate guy, I'm going for the Monster Squad.
Woo! Yay! Yay! Brah, 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 bring it! Yeah, that's great. I'm happy about that. I wouldn't have had a little mini huff as I sometimes do if the Goonies had won, but I am very pleased the Monster Squad won.
Could be controversial.
Do you think? Yeah, maybe. I think maybe the Goonies fans are greater in number, but damn it, the Monster Squad fans have bigger
Hearts.
Hearts. Thanks, Chris. Great. Let's do next week's films. What are you picking, Chris?
Alex, I'm giving you...
Wait!
What?
What? Do you want to do the clue again? Do the clue. Remind us of the clue.
The clue was the show must go on.
Yeah, I meant it as tension building, not because I'd forgotten. The show must go on. Now I'm tension building. The show must go on. Victoria, have you got any guesses? The show must go on.
Please let it be Sister Act. But I don't think it is.
Oh, is it The Greatest Showman?
It is not. The clue was much more to one film than the other, but that one film, it was then your key into the other film. So the films are, Alex, you are going to be looking at the life and times of Farouk Bulsara, a.k.a. Freddie Mercury, because you're doing Bohemian Rhapsody.
The show must go on!
Vicky, you are looking at the life and times of Reginald Kenneth Dwight, a.k.a. Elton John, as you are doing Rocket Man.
I'm so tempted to sing. Right, so Yellow Brick Road for me is a karaoke favourite, but it's so fucking hard to sing it, so I'm not going to embarrass myself. But thank you so much.
I've never been thanked before when I'm doing one of these.
I really love that song.
You're welcome.
I really love that.
And next week you will be singing, everyone can hear a little bit of Vicky singing Yellow Brick Road, which is exciting.
Oh, I'm so close to singing it now. I love it. Okay, I'll work
and if
on
you,
it.
If you've not heard Vicky sing, it's a kind of magic. It's a kind of magic.
What a show off you are.
Right then, we are done for another week. The Monster Squad is our winner. It trounced the Goonies, or it won at least. Choose your words. We'll be back with Bohemian Rhapsody versus Rocket Man from Monday. Please subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us if you see fit. And also stay in touch at ClashPod on Twitter or show@clashpod.com on email. Back on Monday. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.